Hail, fellow, and well met. I'm Mouse, and this is a podcast about characters at play and the players who create them. Our guest this week is Brandon Kirkman, a comedian and illustrator living in Chicago that wants to worm his way into your heart because he is a very deadly parasite. Hi, Brandon.
That's me. I think we have a lot of sayings in society that are just really weird. And worm your way into the heart, that's always been one that really gets on my nerves. I don't know why, because it's really disgusting when you think about it.
It is quite the metaphor, I gotta say. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. I'm a very deadly disease towards dogs and humans.
Hey, Brandon, tell me about your character.
I know we talked about a few, because I do a lot of role-playing, but I also, with the comedy stuff, I've done a lot of characters over the years, and one that we used to do together when we were writing for The Brine, which was an excellent podcast, was Dusty McClavin.
Dusty.
Yeah, oh, man, I miss doing that so much, but yeah, I think we decided he was like a new-age yoga instructor that lost 5 of his children and his wife to boating accidents, all of them. That fact to me to this day is still really entertaining. I don't know why.
we've met before. Yeah, Brian Weekly was the I think our longest episode couldn't have been longer than like 15 minutes. A short kind of surrealist sketch comedy podcast that had a small following. I don't know if they were dedicated or not, but they were.
They were small, though. They weren't dedicated, but we knew they were small, at least.
It was kind of freeform, and we would just kind of create bits. I know I liked creating like sketches that were maybe like 6-second absurdities, but Dusty was a character that kind of stuck with the show and started growing and growing as it went on.
Yeah. I think what happened is it was just a weird idea that me and Kathy had one day when we were having our meeting of doing like this, like, just, you know, smooth talking guy who's just like, hello, and let's do some yoga poses. And then basically he would just start talking about his life and it'd be really depressing details. And then it got more and more strange from there. But I think that's when it started to really pick up and become something great. Yeah, I miss him.
Yeah. And he started showing up in other sketches as it went on. Right. Like Max, our friend Max had kind of this ongoing sketch called the Wizard Blood Bowl, which is just kind of an excuse for him to do some like sound effects and audio engineering of fantasy magic sports. But I think, yeah, Dusty showed up at the end of one as the victor, as just like having participated in some sort of yogic mind trance or something.
Yeah. He'd become so down on himself and so invaluable to type of any effort that even any type of physical damage couldn't harm him at that point, which I liked that idea a lot.
Someone who outwardly presents as so centered and serene, and yet like the turmoil inside.
Yeah. And then towards the end of the podcast, Kathy started writing these huge vignettes about Dusty McClavin's wife, Miss McClavin, that had left him after all of the tragic deaths of their children. And it got real dark and funny too at the same time, and this really weird like metaphysical journey she had and going to hoist bars where people hoist things.
Oh my god. Yeah, I guess to my mind, I'm thinking of the people listening to this who haven't listened to Brian. This is all sounds very challenging.
And it's gonna be the same if you go back and listen. It was a good challenging, though. It was one of those things where it was really intricate but weird details that were really good payoffs if you were listening to it.
Yeah, because I think the core group who created the show were all members of the humor magazine The Gargoyle at the University of Michigan. And I think that Midwestern, dark, surreal, self-deprecating humor informed it a lot. And I was involved because I got married to one of the members, and you were involved because...
Which was me. It's been a while.
You were involved because I think we thought you were funny, and we asked you to contribute. And then, like, you became like a really like central part of the show towards the end. But I think, yeah, the environment was supposed to invoke like an AM radio station in rural mid-Michigan, except there was actually a radio station segment in the show, so it was kind of like a meta format.
Cages, which I'll never get tired of that name.
KJZZ Radio.
And I was really excited to get on board with it because growing up, I think one of the more influential things for me in comedy was on Sunday nights, I used to listen on WBZ out here in the Chicago area. They'd have two shows they'd play at around 11 p.m. on Sunday, and they still do to this day, which makes me happy, which is Joe Frank, which is just a really weird dude that has these sketches that don't make sense. Sometimes they're really funny, sometimes they're just really weird, and there's nothing to explain. And then after that, they'd have Word Jazz, which was this guy who would just walk you through all these like mental exercises, but also they'd always be very strange setups. And I think that back-to-back always made me really appreciate how weird public radio can be.
Yeah. And I loved working on Brian, and I loved the format because it was technically a sketch show, but there wasn't really a lot of formal collaborative writing, and a lot of the writing that went into it was improvisational.
Yeah.
Even before we adopted a formal improvised segment when the show started to get a little bit longer, it always felt like a kind of play, which is why, yeah, I want to talk to you about this podcast about role-playing and characters and characters we create to play with, because I feel like Dusty really, really had like a life and a story by the time we concluded the podcast. And that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, we had a few characters that kind of split off that way too. And then I'd say even just like segments that kept coming back. I mean, I know you had the Fritz beer one we did that was really entertaining to me that we'd bring up as different products. And then I also had the energy drink of Gorilla Lightning, which we'd do as a commercial segment. Yeah, Gorilla Lightning was actually from comedy. It's something I used to do on stage and I do every once in a while, talking about the like how toxic masculinity has even worked its way into energy drinks at this point. We're like, I remember the tagline I'd say on stage is like, Gorilla Lightning, and all you women can drink horse water for all I care. Just like, this drink's for a man, no one else. Only men can be awake in this world.
And yeah, there were several of those Gorilla Lightning like commercial spots that just got more and more absurd as they went on.
Yeah, I think the last one I did was like White Power Berry. Oh boy, it was a good flavor. Yeah, but my favorite thing too about all those things is that they're always like this really sweet, overly sugary flavor. Like they're aware that like they're just a candy drink, and it's for guys like, no, I don't like candy. I like big man things, like big old lumberjacks and just logs being thrown all over the way.
Yeah, and if you just like put a shot of vodka in them,
yeah,
like, they would be a girl drink.
Yeah, like the think that could even hurt your self-image in any way to me has always been entertaining. But I think going back to the Brian and the characters we'd have, it was definitely like this Midwestern sensibility. Like I find the humor out here is great in Chicago and all that, because something about this area of being surrounded by that kind of weird, like, we all come from these very archaic backgrounds of family values that don't make sense in the modern age. And then we have all this weird, like, spending 7 months to 8 months inside indoors because the weather will kill you. And then I think all those weird combinations of those Christian values and deadly weather make you have a really good sense of humor.
Absolutely. I grew up in the South, and I felt oddly at home when I moved to Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota's like, great.
There was some cultural things where I just fit right in. But something I never quite got growing up in the South is when I was in the Midwest and I was with people's families, either a friend or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or they would always talk about who was dying or who had cancer.
Oh yeah, that's the best thing, man. It still goes on to this day.
And like, God, in the South, like that, we do not talk about that. But yeah, that was it's like the bluntness of that in humor was really alien, but really refreshing and really an interesting pool I got to swim around in with all my Midwestern friends in a comedy podcast like Brian, which had really only the loosest of constraints and kind of like maybe a theme or maybe an attitude or a feeling, but no real restrictions on the characters you could create or the type of comedy you could do.
Yeah.
As long as it could fit like
everybody
in
where
9 minutes.
Yeah, everybody we worked with was like fantastic, and it makes me always like sad that we're not doing it anymore, especially for like people like Max and Kathy, where everything they would create would be super funny and well thought out. So I'm always hoping like they will be like one day like, oh, we got a new idea, let's all get back together. But I know how time and change works too, though, which is always a sad thing.
They also did like all the work.
yeah, that's, I mean, they definitely did all the editing. I got really good from the podcast for editing and doing sound engineering stuff. I mean, basic, like in Audacity, but it's helped a ton for comedy stuff and other podcasts I've worked on too. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things we got from working on it too, which I really like.
That's awesome.
But yeah, another thing too, I wanted to give a shout out while we're talking about all this stuff too, is that I always remembered how good the music segments would be when you had to do them, especially for any of the banjo playing.
Yeah, I guess I technically got a credit for doing the music, even though I think I recorded maybe like six or seven pieces of music that got recycled. And but the theme music for Brian that got picked up, like I intended as just kind of a one-time throwaway thing. Like, I don't know, I think Kathy liked it or saw something in it, and that like became the theme for the show.
Yeah, I think about it often. It was a good thing, man. That was really good music.
It took absolutely no effort. It just kind of came out of nowhere. But yeah, like it kind of gives me chills when I listen to it again.
Yeah, well, like I think like character creation, art, and all that stuff in general, it's that frustrating conundrum of there's been a lot of times where I'll plan out characters for like, you know, if I'm playing RPGs like Pathfinder or something, or even writing sketch stuff. Like, the more time I put into it sometimes, and I have this elaborate idea, I'm like, oh, the payoff's going to be so good, and this character's going to be so well-developed or funny, and then it just turns out to be pure shit. And then every once in a while, it'll be the opposite, where I just have, like, this quick idea for either, like, a character, or even go into, like, since I do art for drawing, and, like, a quick sketch or a quick character comes out of nowhere, and it's the best thing I've done. That's always frustrating to me.
Yeah, when you sit down to work, like, nothing comes, and, like, your best ideas are, like, come unbidden on the toilet or something.
Yeah, I completely understand.
Or from the toilet.
Yeah, I completely understand why the Greeks had that belief in like there being a muse, because the more and more I get older, the more I'm like, man, they were onto something there. Of like just some weird divine force just strikes you with an idea every once in a while.
Absolutely. Or character moments come in like response to other moments, like while we're playing around, like a big part of my Dungeons and Dragons character of her story is that she's a sex worker, and I didn't originally conceive of her as having that be a part of her life, but like we found ourselves in a brothel and we needed to have an excuse to stay the night. And so it just occurred to me, like, this kind of makes sense with her history as kind of like a wandering rock and roller and free spirit. Like, oh yeah, she's got a guild card.
Yeah, that's so, I always like those develop backstories too when you get a chance to play with people who are really good at D&D or pen and paper like that. Especially kind of exploring like I wouldn't say like tragic backstories, but like what makes a character, and that it kind of makes you. I think in general, it makes you relate to people in the real world because it makes you kind of more empathetic and realize like, oh man, everybody's got this weird path they got to go down to get where they are.
Like just kind of ping-ponging off of other characters' reactions and things that are happening in the game, like you can learn something about a character that makes them more rich than you could have conceived just on your own in a vacuum in your own head.
I mean, I've referred to D&D and all those games as nerd improv, and I feel like it's a really accurate analogy because you can't play D&D by yourself, but on top of that it's a lot of yes-anding and building up these great ideas because of people you play with. You know, if it was done completely by yourself, and I've seen this a lot too, like when people get really excited about a character they're making, they'll put this huge monolithic backstory into it, and they'll get all ready for the first day, and then they'll try to play that character, and then you're like, this character is boring, and you spend so much time on it, as opposed to like letting it kind of develop naturally. I feel like it's almost similar to improv, where you put in a few like skeletal structures of like, this is my character, this is where they came from, and then you start building on it with their interactions in the world that they're playing in currently, you know?
Yeah, it's almost, yeah, like, it's better to have a sketch of who they are, but like what really matters is the situation you're playing in and the people you're playing with. So that's what really informs the characters, how they react to that.
Yeah, it's like almost a weird reminder of how important it is to be in the present, you know?
That's a very dusty like thing of you to say, Brandon.
Yeah. Well, yeah, going back to who we're actually talking about, Dusty McClavin, I think, does play off a lot of my fears, and that's why the character came out so good.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I always have this fear that I'll have this basically inward turning of becoming like one of those crusty old men that have all these beliefs on the world that don't really land anywhere, and they've just become very meek and weak towards everything, so they just accept anybody who wants to listen to them, and that's good enough for them. Which, I mean, isn't a bad thing, but I guess it's that fear of becoming invalid in a world that doesn't need you, and then just accepting it. I think that's how I felt about the character all the time, of like, he's had his 5 kids lost to boating accidents, and he is a yoga instructor to some mild acclaim, and he's kind of shit at that, so he got this own weird kind of, I think we decided it was like a On the Cages, just like a 15-minute segment where he'd do yoga instructions, and even then his life would just be falling apart in front of him whenever he'd be doing them.
That's really compelling to me, because, I mean, yeah, Dusty's a tragic character, and he's a comedic character. Like, we're supposed to be laughing at him.
Yeah.
Conceptually. But I think there's such a line of, I guess if you can break through the wall of, like, secondhand embarrassment, there's a thread of empathy that you can definitely have with him. And I think that coming from that place of your own fears and asking the audience to connect empathetically with him is what maybe led him to kind of be the hero of the podcast. Like, there wasn't really any narrative before Dusty came along, and then a narrative formed around him.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where he did have a redeeming factor to him, and I think it was good to play him off my fear of my life becoming a joke, and then eventually like saying like, how can somebody redeem themselves after that point? And I think that's like always the funniest thing to me in the world, is I think about my weaknesses and fears quite often, and as a comedian, the biggest fear is that my life would be a joke, and then there's something very funny and beautiful about that if you're a comedian, of having that fear, because it's kind of like what you want, but not in that way. Like, you want people to laugh, but not laugh at your existence, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it's I guess it's almost that be careful what you wish for scenario, you know, especially doing comedy in Chicago, and I've been doing it for about maybe 3 to 4 years now, of like being that person who's going to be like 40 and still doing open mics and being like, yeah, I'm going to be a big comedian one day. And like, that in itself is a very funny thing, but not what you wanted it to be.
Yeah, I don't know. Chicago's a funny place. I did stand up for like a minute in Chicago. And yeah, I was very lucky to start doing open mics in a room that Cameron Esposito was running.
Yeah, Cole's, man. It's still going strong too, which is nice.
Yeah, but it's like Chicago has like such a scene and such an identity. And then you get to a point where it's time to move to Los Angeles, or it's time to move to New York. It's just kind of an interesting idea that like you can exist in a scene with the knowledge that it's kind of an incubation chamber. I guess I might feel the same way in like Toronto, or like Denver's the same way here out in Colorado.
Yeah. One of my comedian peers / friends moved there recently, Dave Lasso, really funny guy. But it's kind of interesting because that climate's changing, and basically you'll feel like that your life has once again become a joke. So once again, it's like, There's Dusty McClavin's in anywhere you are, you know, where you're afraid that you're going to get stuck somewhere and become completely unaware of what you are and what you do.
Yeah, except he would be kind of hot shit out here.
Oh, yeah. I think he just needs to find... I think that's another thing, too, is, like, finding the right place is also another important part.
Yeah, Colorado is a hotbed of that kind of woo-woo, new-agey, like, white mysticism.
Yeah.
It's like, I live in Longmont, which is, it's a cow town. Like, every time I tell someone where I live, it's like, okay, I live 15 minutes from Boulder. But we have maybe 15 to 20 acupuncture clinics.
Oh, man, that's a lot.
And more than one shop on Main Street that sells just like crystals and oils and tinctures.
Yeah, the crystals have kind of hit big here. I actually know a few people in the comedy scene that are into crystals. And that's one of the things where I don't judge, but sometimes in the back of your mind, you always get that really thought going. It's like, I don't know. It's I wouldn't make fun of somebody for their own beliefs, though, either. So it's like, if it's bringing that person joy and it's not hurting anyone, always a good thing.
Yeah, I think, yeah, we feel that way about Dusty, too.
Yeah, Dusty's also like a personification of that, too, I feel like. Like, hey, he's not hurting anybody. Well, okay, that one's debatable, too. Just don't let him have any children, and then he's good. I don't know what it is, but there's something so funny about boating accidents in this modern age. I mean, like, back in the day, that was a legitimate concern when everything was done on vessels like that. But nowadays, like, if somebody dies in a boating accident, you have to be like, really? That's how they died?
Who has a boat?
Yeah. You had to go out of your way for that one, man.
These days, it's like, did you, like, yeah, like, time travel to a John Candy movie in the 80s? Like,
yeah. Was there talking raccoons that were the narrators of the film the whole time?
Yeah, no one can afford boats.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the about time for the segment of the show that doesn't have a name officially yet. I don't know if it'll ever have a name, but I'm going to call it Snack Time, where I dispense treats to our listeners and give a recommendation for something lovely that I want to share. And this snack for this episode is Time Warp Comics in Boulder, Colorado. It is a brick and mortar comic book store. They have a really great staff, a great inventory of everything from, you know, your superhero stuff to super rare, Silver Age, bonkers, expensive first printings that they sell on eBay. They've got good manga and a section dedicated to all ages books, which I really appreciate, and that's usually where I end up when I shop there. So I want to shout them out, and if you're in Colorado, that's the shop you should be at. Time Warp Comics.
Yeah, it's I always like shout outs to good local comic book stores like that, or especially anything that has like a good section dedicated to, like, you know, different ages or people, especially like where I live in Chicago in Rogers Park. I'm right next to Andersonville, and they have one of my favorite bookstores in the city, which is Women and Children First, which is basically all books dedicated to all ages and then women. Andersonville rules. I wish I could. I might end up moving there in the next year or two with Barbara, my fiance. But yeah, it's a good place. But do I do the recommendation thing now?
Sure, if you want to.
Yeah, I gotta say, I do like Snack Time a lot. That's a cute name. You should keep that one.
Okay, thank you.
It's like, ooh, I got a little snack for the mind. I've been reading, and I'm about to finish, so I can safely say it's a good book, unless, like, the last few pages are gonna be like, and it was a dream the whole time, which I know they wouldn't, but I'm reading The Thousand Autumns of Jacob D. Zoot right now, written by David Mitchell. He did Cloud Atlas and a few other great books like that that got turned into very weird but fun movies. But it's about a Dutch clerk that's in Japan during the 1800s. And it starts off kind of like a good historic fiction novel, and then gets real weird halfway through in a very delightful way, involving like a weird dark cult that steals somebody away that he has an interest in. And yeah, if you've ever read any David Mitchell before, you kind of know what you're in for, but he's kind of got that surrealist touch of modern writers like Kurt Vonnegut or Haruki Murakami. So I kind of recommend it very highly. Very good book. And then, yeah, if you haven't read Cloud Atlas, of course, check that one out. Maybe skip the movie, though. It's, oh boy, what a mess. It's one of those movies that's a delightful mess, but it is nothing like the book, thank God. So.
All right. Well, that sounds awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Brandon. Do you have any Any additional plugs for yourself or anything coming up?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, as you did too, I do comedy in Chicago with a semi-successful career going. Hopefully I don't become a joke in the long run. But the show I've been producing for about 2 years, Ego Trip Club, it's in Chicago at Brew Coffee, which is right next to Myopic Books, which is my favorite bookstore in the city.
Mine too.
Yeah, Women and Children First, I said, is one of my favorites. But if I had to pick number one, it would definitely be Myopic Books, but it's right next door to there. We do it once a month at the beginning of the month on the first Wednesday, and in November, my producer I've done the show with for 2 years, Amanda Lynn Deal, who is my comedy sister and a wonderful, great person and comedian, is moving off to Portland. So we're adding a few people to the show, and I think it's going to be a pretty big thing. Like, it's ramping it up quite a bit. So we're going to have this big, huge celebration, which is going to be... I got to pull up my calendar. I just realized when I'm talking about this. It's going to be November 2nd, that Wednesday, at 7 p.m. at Brew Coffee. If for some reason you're in Chicago and you hear this, I highly recommend it. We're going to have, like, free booze, free food. The lineup's going to be crazy. And it's a themed comedy showcase. So our headliner, who I think is going to be Brandon Kiefer, a person who has a very similar name to me and looks a little bit like me, and we've talked about this quite a bit, is going to be headlining. And it's going to be a really great show. We usually open it up with a really good local musician. And all the comedians we get are always fantastic, so I highly recommend it if you hear this podcast in that time frame. If not, you drop the ball, son. I'm sorry.
Chicago people, do not miss it. Is that the coffee shop that's like 80s themed?
No, that's Wormhole Coffee, which is a few doors down. And I gotta be honest, I like their coffee a little better, but Brew Coffee's great still. I'm not gonna diss them either. They have a great space, and I like what they do there too.
Oh no, sorry, I fucked up.
No, well, this is my problem, is I'm too honest about things sometimes.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks again, Brandon. Appreciate you coming on. And thanks to Philomela for the use of the song I Am a Fire from the album Sapphire Chamber, which is the intro and outro of our show. I don't necessarily believe in karma, but if you do, go out there in the world and earn those critical success roles.
Ooh, I like that.
Bye, y'all.
See ya.